Thanks for the introduction. I'm Jingjing from University of Washington. And in this talk, I will introduce our recent work on elastic memory management for cloud data analytics. This work is done at the University of Washington with my advisor, Magda. Today, we have the need of analyzing large-scale data. And we observe that cloud data analytics has the following properties. First is that these applications are usually memory intensive, which means we usually need to run them on machines with large memory. And second, the computing resources on a single machine are usually not enough for these applications. So these applications are usually deployed on clusters or in the cloud. And third, the cluster or in the cloud are usually shared by multiple systems, applications, and users. So the memory management under this setting is an important problem that we want to study. Today, cloud memory management is usually based on containers. As an example, here are two applications, a Mira query and a Spark application. Mira is a big data management and cloud service system developed in ULab. And this resource manager wants to allocate these two applications on this single machine. What it usually needs to do is that it first estimates the memory usages of these two applications, then launches containers with memory limits. However, these estimations may not always be accurate. And in this example, the Mira query would fail because of over memory, and the Spark application can finish. And alternatively, we can use another strategy, which is to always overestimate the memory usage of the application. So in this case, the Mira query would finish with no problem, but we wouldn't have enough space for the Spark application. This example shows the limitations of container-based memory management. Each container has a hard limit, which is good for isolation, but it lacks flexibility. And estimating memory usage before execution is a hard problem. So what's going to happen if we always rely on inaccurate memory estimates? First is that we may have application failures due to out of memory. And second, for some systems implemented in languages with garbage collection, even if the estimate is large enough, we still may have performance degradation due to garbage collection. As an example, here is a self-drawing query running on three systems, Mira, Spark 1.1, and Spark 2.0. The x-axis is the heap size, and the y-axis is the total query time. And when memory is abundant, all these three systems can finish this query around 35 to 40 seconds. But when memory becomes scarce, Mira and Spark 1.1 failed at 2 and 4 gigabytes because of all the memory. And their query runtimes also increased to 150 and 500 seconds. And Spark 2.0 didn't fail because it has the ability to dump data to disk when memory is scarce. So this example shows how hard it is to find the sweet spot of memory versus query time for a specific query running on a specific system without a real execution. So we propose our approach called Elastic MEM to solve this problem. Elastic MEM has the following three components. First is that we make container memory limits dynamic, because most of the containers, such as Yarn or Docker, have fixed memory limit that can't be changed during runtime. And second, we allocate memory to multiple applications by performing actions on them. These actions include garbage collection or changing the memory limit and so on. And third, we predict how these memory actions can affect query performance. And we use these predictions to drive memory allocation decisions. In this work, our focus would be analytical queries and specifically relational queries, and in Java-based containers. In the rest of the talk, I will use the words container and JVM interchangeably. Now let's take a look at each component. In terms of memory management, OpenJDK has a rigid design. There is a maximal heap space that the user needs to specify in the beginning, and this number can be changed during runtime. However, for operating systems support memory overcommitting and 64-bit address space, this is an unnecessary rigid design because we can always reserve and commit a large address space in the beginning, and it does not physically occupy any memory. Then we can change the memory limits according to real usage. Now, this figure shows how we modified OpenJDK. We added a socket-based API. And through this API, an external resource manager can perform actions to this JVM. We also added a dynamic limit to the heap. And this dynamic limit can be changed during runtime through the API through an action called grill. And we can also trigger a GC through this API, which will collect the dead objects and also will shrink the dynamic limit. And it's also possible to kill the VM through the API. And we will see a more detailed list of these actions later. The second component is we allocate memory to these multiple applications. Here we have multiple queries sharing the same address space. And at each time step, we allocate memory by performing actions on them. The goal is to reduce query times and failures. We model this problem as a 0-1 knapsack problem. The capacity is the total memory, and the items in this knapsack are JVM memory usages after performing actions on them, because each action may give you a different memory usage of one JVM. And each item has a value. This value is defined on multiple attributes, and we will see a more detailed definition of the value later. But first, let's take a look at the example. Here is a knapsack with two VMs. And at this time, one possible allocation strategy would to let both JVMs grow. However, in this case, we don't have enough space for both of them to grow. So this would be an invalid solution. Another solution would be to trigger GC for one VM and let the other grow. Then starting from here, the first possible solution is to queue one VM to release some space for the other one to grow. And the second solution would be to pass one VM and let the other grow. And in this case, we would prefer the second solution over the first one because the first one killed one VM while the second one still preserves the possibility for both to complete. This example shows intuitively how we prefer one solution over the other. Now let's take a look at the value definition. The value of an action and also a state is defined on three attributes. The first is the total number of queued queries, and fewer is better, because we would like to finish queries as many as possible. Second is the total number of paused queries, and also fewer is better, because we would like to make progress. And third is cost, which is the cost to acquire more memory. We would like to get more memory by spending less time on it. This is defined as the time-space efficiency. Then the value of an action is defined as follows. For action queue and no op, their corresponding attributes are set to be 1. And for other actions, such as GC actions and grow, the cost is defined as the time divided by the space. Then the value of a state is defined as the sum of all the action values. And the order is the lexicographic order of the above three attributes, queue, no op, and cost. Now let's take a look at how we compute time and space. For grow, which increases the memory limit, the space is defined as the estimated heap growth. And in this work, we use a simple solution, which is to use the maximal heap usage change in the past few time steps as the estimation. And the time would be to acquire and access this estimated growth from the operating system. And we run a calibration program to get this number. For GC actions, the space is the size of recycled memory, and the time is the GC action time. Then the question is, how do we predict the time and space for these GC actions from heap states? So this goes to our third component, build preferred models from heap states. In this work, our focus is analytical queries and specifically relational queries. And we observe that these queries are dominated by large in-memory data structures. As example, here is a query with one aggregate operator, one join, and two select. The aggregate has one hash table, the join has two hash tables because it's symmetric hash join, and the two select operators do not use much memory. So we pick hash table as our focus in this work, and we are going to predict the time and the space for different GC actions from these hash table statistics. And here is an example of a hash table in this join operator. The keys are zip codes, which are integers, and the values are names, which are strings. In this example, we can observe that there are a few important features of the hash table, which are the number of tuples, number of keys, and also the schema information. And we treat primitive types such as long differently from Java object types such as string, because Java object has a much larger in-memory overhead than primitive types. And we also record the sum of lengths of string because it's also an important factor. So these are the total in-memory size. And in OpenJDK, there are two heap subspaces called young generation and old generation. Young generation is for storing objects that are young and before a garbage collection, and old generation is for objects that are survived after a garbage collection. Also, there are two types of GC actions. The young generation collection would collect the dead objects in the young generation only and to promote live objects to the old generation. Another type is full collection, which collects both generations. So in order to get the time and space for these two types of GC actions, we also need to know which part of the hash table is in the young generation and which part is in the old. Assuming we start from this hash table of two entries and they both live in young generation, then after a GC, these will be promoted to the old generation. Then later on, we have two new entries and they will live in the young generation. So besides the total number of tuples and the keys, we also record the delta numbers of tuples and keys since the last GC. These numbers will be for the objects in the young generation. And in total, we have seven features to collect and four values to predict, which are time space for young and old collection. Okay. So for the evaluation, we use the model called M5P in YCAP, which is decision tree plus linear regression model. The training is done by first picking feature values from the feature space, then we generate a hash table and run a query with the generated hash table. Then we collect runtime statistics and use the statistics as input together with the feature values for the YCAP model. For testing, we pick 17 TPCH queries and we randomly trigger GCs for them. There are four values to predict in total, and we use relative absolute errors as the error metric. And as we can see, for all these four values, the relative absolute errors are always below 25%. And we will show that these numbers are already good enough to help us with memory allocation decisions. Now let's take a look at the evaluation for scheduling. We run all the experiments on one Amazon EC2 R3 4x large instance, and we pick four most memory intensive TPCH queries with scale factors 1 and 2. So in total, there are 8 queries, and we run these 8 queries on Myria. There are two types of evaluation approach. One is original, which is OpenJDK 7, and one is elastic, which is our approach. For original, there are two variants, serial execution and fully parallel. For serial execution, we submit all the queries one by one. It will finish more queries than fully parallel, but it takes much longer time. And for fully parallel, we submit all the 8 queries together at the same time, and each query would get an equal share of the total memory. So this will finish queries more faster than serial execution, but when memory is scarce, it may fail more queries. And for elastic, we also introduce a variant called resubmit, which resubmits queued queries serially after all queries complete. This is for a fair comparison with serial execution, because we need to give each query a chance to run independently. First, let's compare elastic to serial execution. Here, the y-axis is the elapsed time, and the x-axis is the total memory. And we also label the total number of completed queries on top of each bar. And we are comparing green bars elastic versus gray bars serial execution. And in this evaluation, elastic can finish all these queries using much less time comparing to serial execution in most of cases, and the only exception is 10 gigabytes. Here, Elastic finished used slightly more time than serial execution and also failed one more query. This is because it takes some time for our Elastic method to degrade into a serial execution, but the overhead is not large. And in the second experiment, we compare Elastic to fully parallel. And again, y-axis is the elapsed time and x-axis is total memory. Here, the fully parallel method failed to finish all the 8 queries except 90 gigabytes, when memory is very abundant, while our Elastic method can finish all the 8 queries except 10 gigabytes, when memory is very scarce. And also, when the memory is larger than or equal to 20 gigabytes, Elastic can finish more queries and also using less time comparing to fully parallel. These above two evaluations show the advantages of Elastic MEM. First, we can automatically adjust concurrency level. And second, we always have faster query executions and fewer query failures in most of the cases. And second, third, when serial execution is necessary, the overhead is not large. We also evaluated the total GC time reduction. Here, the x-axis is the total memory. The y-axis is the total GC time reduction percentage over fully parallel. And each color represents a different memory increments unit, U, in our knapsack problem. There are two types of U. It could be a fixed number, such as 500 megabytes, or a dynamic number, such as 1/12 of the total free space. Here, when memory is larger than or equal to 30 gigabytes, all these different values of U give us similar performance. While when memory is lower than 30 gigabytes, the fixed values of U have larger reduction comparing to dynamic values of U. But this is because that the fixed values tend to fail these queries earlier than dynamic values. And this evaluation shows that when memory is abundant, careful tuning of U is not required. But when memory is scarce, then different values of U may make a difference. We also have other experiment results. We experiment with the total query time saving, and the time saving could be up to 30%. And also, we tested real memory usage, and our Elastic method can use memory more efficiently than OpenJDK 7. In the end, let me conclude our work. In Elastic MEM, we first show that scheduling with hard memory limit is inefficient and unnecessary. And second, we show how we modified OpenJDK to avoid using containers with hard limits. And third, we designed a scheduling algorithm to allocate memory across multiple applications in real time, including building performance models to predict GC time and space saving. And we can reduce query time up to 30%, GC time up to 80%, and we use memory more efficiently. Thank you, and happy to take questions.
A very nice talk. I'm Wei Cheng from UTCS. So my question is that you design socket interface at the JVM. So who will issue the commands to the JVM, that resource manager or like the framework?
Which part of?
Who will issue the commands to the sockets?
Oh, we have a like external scheduler. We implement external scheduler.
Okay. The second question is that I know that the JVM has some parameter like XMS, mm-hmm. which is what we said the minimum memory requirement and XMX.
Yes.
So the after you start a JVM, the JVM will, the memory allocation for the JVM will dynamic change between these two limits.
Yes.
So if the JVM has a like this automatical mechanism, so how did you compare this automatical mechanism with your approach, like the you set the increase command to the JVM?
Once you specify the XMS and XMX, there is no way to change these numbers anymore. During the JVM's lifetime, right? So
yes, you could set a very large XMX.
Then
if the memory consumption is not utilized, but you can still set a very large XMS to avoid like the GC overhead or the out of memory error.
If you indeed have enough memory to set this number to a large number, then sure, but it will. If you need to run multiple JVMs on the same machine, then
yes, I know. Yeah. Like the, if you have two JVM run on same node, and it's possible that one JVM will consume less memory and one JVM will consume more memory, but you both set a very large XMS. And but in this case, the memory could be balanced. So.
If you need to run multiple VMs on the single machine, then you need to decide which one will have this large XMS. And this VM may not actually use this assigned space. So that's a problem. And in our approach, we can do this dynamic rescheduling at runtime. So there's no need to set those limits.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, Ben Reed from Facebook. I was wondering, when you have this distributed query engine, you have this notion of pause, which is kind of cool. But oftentimes, if you pause it too long, like the query engine will think that that node is dead and will effectively fail it, even though you've just paused the JVM. I'm wondering if you had to compensate for that at all.
The compensate is actually defined in the cost function because the number of pause queries is one of the attributes.
But I think when you do the pause query, you the idea is that you're going to pause it and then bring it back to life, right?
Yes.
But if the query manager, if you pause the JVM and then the query manager doesn't hear from that agent or that worker, then he'll think the worker's dead.
So here the pause means we don't have enough memory for this VM to grow, but we also will not kill it, so we'll just keep the internal state in memory. The query manager is still able to ping this node if it's possible, because here's
the pause. That's what I was wondering. How do you make sure that the query manager can still ping the node if the JVM is paused?
This is usually done through our socket-based API, so they will make a socket call to the VM. So the pause doesn't mean that all the threads are blocked. The pause only means we do not grow the memory of the VM anymore.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
So I have a question. A critical part of this work, right, is being able to have that model that can accurately predict space demand and the time for GC, right? And in your talk, right, you presented a model that works, right? But I guess I wanted to know a little bit more about the development of that model and sort of two things. One, was it hard to develop that model? Did you try a lot of stuff that didn't work before you found one that worked, right? And then did all of that effort, right, shed any light into how you might make models for other kinds of applications?
These models will work for data structures that their in-memory size can be predicted or highly correlated with the few features. Hash table would be a good example because there are keys and values. And if there are more complicated in-memory data structures that can be captured through a few features, then I would think that it would be harder to develop such a model. And in our case, it actually depends on the real implementation of this hash table. So we initially have those hash tables implemented using Java object types, which are harder to predict. Then we switch them to primitive arrays, then the models work much better.
Okay. Are there any more questions? Oh, there is. A last, yeah. Come on up. You're the next questioner.
Okay. Yeah, I'm Masadrasi from NTT Data in Japan. And I have a similar question. In recent Spark uses the original custom-based data structure of its own. In that case, in this approach, in my understanding, you're using the estimation of memory usage.
So, estimation of the memory.
Estimation of the object size or memory usage to control the heap size.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
In case of the processing engine, which uses the original data structure, your approach should communicate with such an engine.
So if we want to apply this approach to other engines, then these other engines need to provide enough statistics to predict the large in-memory data structure size. Right. If such a data is provided, then yes.
Yeah, okay, I see.